I know at this particular point that you're going to be pretty happy because we really have finished the true bacteria now. So we don't have to do any more on those. Now, we still have organisms that some people place in with bacteria, bacterial-like, etc. And that's the chlamydia and the rickettsia. If you look at table 2-26, it has a comparison of some different organisms. For instance, typical bacteria are not obligate intracellular parasites. But you'll notice that chlamydia and rickettsia are obligate intracellular parasites. You can't grow them on artificial type media. You'll also note one more organism that we'll do after we do the rickettsia and the chlamydia is going to be the mycoplasma. Mycoplasma are not obligate intracellular parasites. They're like bacteria in that particular instance. The other thing on mycoplasma, and we will again cover that later, is they have no cell wall. So you cannot use penicillin or cephalosporins in treatment of mycoplasma pneumonia. Let's go to table 2-27. 2-27 has a great deal of detail about rickettsia. All of the rickettsia are not high level. Let me go through in order the rickettsia that I would make sure that you knew, that you know, that are very high level. The first one is Rocky Mountain spotted fever. We certainly have that in the United States, and that's an important rickettsial disease. The organism is called Rickettsia rickettsii, and you'll see it's listed as a bacteria, and that's fine. The vector is a tick. That you should know. That is very high yield organism. The second organism in order of high yield is Q fever. That is also in the United States. Q fever is an organism. The disease is caused by Coxiella burnetii. And you'll notice there is no vector for this. This is an organism that's found in cattle, sheep, goats. It's a farm disease. Those two I would make sure that I knew in great detail. Now, what other rickettsial diseases are a possibility? Well, epidemic typhus is a very dangerous disease. Epidemic typhus occurs when you have filth conditions. Rickettsia prausickii. This is louse-borne. So when you get a lot of people in one area where they have lice, then this is a possible disease. The other one is the disease down at the bottom of the chart, ehrlichiosis. Ehrlichiosis is pretty widespread in Montana, Utah, Wyoming, etc. And it is a disease that's very similar to Rocky Mountain spotted fever. And we will talk about that in just a moment. The first one of these rickettsial diseases that we want to do in detail is the one that you should know best. You should understand and know Rocky Mountain spotted fever. This is Rickettsia rickettsii. This organism is an obligate intracellular parasite, and it is transferred by a tick bite. Now, there are other animals that carry this particular organism. There are reservoirs for this, but it is the tick that transfers it to us. This particular disease is a vasculitis. We are bitten by this tick. This organism enters us. It goes into the endothelial capillaries. It divides there, and it causes a vasculitis. You have extremely high temperatures. This treatment must be started fairly quickly, or this person is going to be in serious condition. Rocky Mountain spotted fever is usually identified by the fact that the rash starts on the soles and wrist and on the soles of the feet and the ankles. You will see from this particular slide, this person has Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and you will see that rash on different areas of that foot. This is a spotted fever case, and the rash has already spread to the trunk. That's the last place that it spreads to. How are you going to treat this? All rickettsia and all chlamydia are treated with tetracycline or doxycycline. How are you going to diagnose it? You're going to not culture it. This organism does not culture. You don't grow it. You don't try it. You do serological diagnosis. You can do a complement fixation test, or you can do a test called the Weill-Felix test. The Weill-Felix test is the fact that the patients that have this disease produce an antibody. This antibody not only reacts with the rickettsia, but it also reacts with Proteus vulgaris. It reacts with certain strains of Proteus vulgaris. It reacts with the OX2 and the OX19 strain, and that helps in identification of this particular disease. The second rickettsial disease that you need to know is Q fever. This disease is caused by Coxiella burnetii. It is unique in the fact that it doesn't do the things that typical rickettsia do. There is no rash, there is no vector, and there is no OX, Weill-Felix, test reaction. You have to use other mechanisms for distinguishing this particular organism. This organism is present in domestic livestock. This organism is spread by barnyard dust. It blows. It gets into our respiratory system. This particular disease, Q fever, is an atypical pneumonia. Now remember, that is a non-productive pneumonia. We talked about Legionella earlier in the lecture being an atypical pneumonia. Well, here is another atypical pneumonia. Diagnosis is serological. Again, treatment is tetracycline. And there is an occupational vaccine for high-risk people. Those are the two major rickettsial diseases. Others that we might mention that you might be aware of is Ehrlichiosis, Ehrlichia. This particular disease is transmitted primarily by ticks. It infects monocytes and macrophages. This actual disease is called human monocytic Ehrlichiosis. Again, I said that it was in Wyoming, Montana, Utah, and some of the western states. The disease is very similar to Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Now we're through with the rickettsia, and we're going to start with another group of organisms called the chlamydia. The chlamydia are obligate intracellular parasites. You use tetracycline or doxycycline for treating them. These are obligate intracellular organisms. These particular organisms have two phases to their life cycle. They have an elementary body stage. That is the infective stage. That is the stage that you would get from another person or from a swimming pool or from a hot tub, etc. And the reticulate body is the body that grows in us. It enlarges, and inside of it has the elementary bodies, and these elementary bodies are released, and then they go into the next host. So Chlamydia trachomatis is the genus and species of the organism that we're going to talk about for a few moments. I want you to note that it is found in the genital tract and the eyes. That's kind of an unusual. What that really means is there are different kinds of diseases that this organism can cause. It can be sexual, or it can be an eye infection. Let's talk first of all about an eye infection. Here is the condition trachoma. It is caused by serogroups A, B, and C, and the organism is Chlamydia trachomatis. Now, not only does this organism cause eye infections, but it causes other infections. If you'll look at this print, this image, you'll see that this is a male, and this male has a chlamydial infection. This is a venereal infection. This is the number one venereal disease in the United States, and it is caused by Chlamydia trachomatis, serogroups D through K. Now that is different than the A through C serogroup. Not only can this cause an STD, but it can also cause inclusion conjunctivitis. Here is an eye infection with this organism. And that is caused by the same serogroup that causes the venereal disease. So it is possible for somebody to have the venereal disease and end up getting it in their eye or getting it in somebody else's eye. This is non-gonococcal urethritis. Gonococcal urethritis is caused by Neisseria gonorrhea. Not only that, but it can also cause a pneumonia in children. So in review, Chlamydia trachomatis, serogroup D through K can cause pneumonia, inclusion conjunctivitis, and a sexually transmitted disease. The third serogroup that's important is the disease lymphogranuloma venereum. You will see this person has a large swelling lymphatic area. This is called a bubo. This particular disease is very dangerous. It's very common in Africa and Asia. It's not as common in the United States. Okay? Common in South America. But this is caused by serogroup L1, L2, and L3. Here it is in a female. This female has this large bubo right here. That is lymphogranuloma venereum caused by serogroup L1, L2, and L3. How do you know that you have a chlamydial infection? Obviously, you can do DNA probes. If you have a fancy STD laboratory, that is probably the preferred way to do it, along with gonorrhea probes at the same time. But other ways are used. Here is a fluorescent antibody. This fluorescent antibody shows the reticulate body. Now remember, inside of that reticulate body will be the developing elementary bodies, and that would be passed from one sex to the next sex. This particular organism also stains very good with iodine. So you either use a fluorescent antibody test or you use an iodine stain for identification of the organism. That's another reticulate body. This is a great reticulate body. In fact, it's even rupturing and the elementary bodies are being liberated from that organism. Here is a great reticulate body and the elementary bodies are being liberated. Now, not only can you use DNA probes, not only can you use iodine and fluorescent mechanisms, but you also, there is an ELISA test that is excellent. You would simply take a scraping from the female vaginal area or from the male urethra. You would take the swab and you would place this swab down in this tube. This tube has a bead and that bead has an antibody on it. That antibody is an antibody to chlamydia. This is called an enzyme assay. We're not going through all the details of the enzyme assay, but this is a positive right here. So serological enzyme assays are also possible to do for this particular disease. You have two more species of chlamydia. The last group that we did was Chlamydia trachomatis. The next species is Chlamydia pneumoniae. Chlamydia pneumoniae is an atypical pneumonia, just like Q fever and just like Legionella. This organism does not have a productive cough. The third species of chlamydia is Chlamydia sitticae. This is transferred to us by birds. Normally, birds that are brought into the United States have to be quarantined, but some people sneak these birds in, particularly parrots, and we end up getting psittacosis. This also is an atypical pneumonia. You certainly want to be aware of the atypical pneumonias. How do you diagnose this in the lungs? You take a scraping, you do a fluorescent antibody, you do an iodine stain, you do an ELISA enzyme assay test, a complement fixation test. There are different ways of diagnosing. Please remember, all chlamydia are treated with tetracycline or doxycycline. One of the last organisms that we're going to do before we start a discussion of medically important fungi is the genus Mycoplasma. Mycoplasma is a very unique organism. Sometimes a high school student, a medical student, will have a cold, chest pains, just don't feel good for a couple of weeks. They go into the infirmary or the clinic or to the doc. He gives them an antibiotic and it just doesn't do any good. 2 weeks later, they feel just as bad. Well, there is a good chance that they have mycoplasma. Mycoplasma is the most common cause of pneumonia in young adults. So high school kids, college kids, medical school individuals may have Mycoplasma pneumoniae. The unique thing is that organism has no cell wall. So you cannot use penicillin, cephalosporins, and some of those antibiotics that you would use. It is respiratory transmitted. It goes from human to human. It is particularly important in areas of where you have a lot of crowding of people. Again, Mycoplasma causes an atypical pneumonia. Just think of how many we've already talked about. Q fever, Chlamydia sitticae, Chlamydia pneumoniae, and now we've got Mycoplasma. Mycoplasma is unique because of the colony that it looks like. If you grow it up on a media called Eaton's agar, it looks like a fried egg. You'll see that this is the yellow part of the egg, and this is the white part of the egg. There are several different diagnostic tests, but one of the tests that's used is called a cold agglutinin test. If a patient has this organism and you bleed them and set their blood in an ice box in the cold, it will agglutinate. Now, there are other types of tests that are a little bit more specific, but this is a pretty easy test. If you get a positive, then you know you got a positive. There are complement fixation tests, etc. Treatment of mycoplasma is excellent for erythromycin. Okay. Now, there is one more that is very, very important, and I would put this a little higher on my list, even though the notes don't have a great deal of detail about it, because 25 years ago, OB started kind of a new practice. They started in vitro fertilization clinics. They would have this couple that have trouble, they're having trouble having kids. They would invite them in. They would charge them $15,000 to $25,000 to do the following. They would overstimulate the female to make large numbers of eggs. They would take these eggs. They would fertilize them in a test tube with the male sperm, the husband's sperm. And then they would in vitro place those eggs again in utero, place those eggs again, and see if she could get pregnant. Well, you know some of the early cases, the first month she started making beta HCG. Hooray, we got pregnancy. The next month she would abort. They didn't know why that was happening, but the reason that was happening, or one of the reasons that it was happening, is there is an organism called ureaplasm. You should be aware of that being a venereal organism. It is not Neisseria, so it's non-Neisseria. It's not chlamydia, it's non-chlamydial urethritis. So today we have discussed several different venereal diseases that certainly are high yield. Chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, soft chancroid,